Hi, everyone. This is Mackenzie Bean, Managing Editor at Becker's Healthcare. Thank you for tuning in to the Becker's Healthcare podcast series. Today, I'm so pleased to be joined by Jim Bonesock, Chief Revenue and Strategy Officer for TransUnion Healthcare, to discuss social determinants of health strategy and use cases. Jim has spent his entire 20-year career focused on various aspects of the healthcare industry, ranging from strategy to process, services to technology, and health systems to corporations. Prior to his current role at TransUnion, Jim served as president and CFO of Strive on Health, a private equity-backed physician revenue cycle management company in Dallas, and the senior vice president of provider growth for PsyOx Health, a healthcare information management company. Jim has also held various leadership positions at Conifer Health Solutions, Deloitte, and Ernst & Young, among other organizations. So Jim, thank you so much for joining us today. How are you doing?
I'm well, Mackenzie. Thank you for having me.
Absolutely. So I thought a good place to start the conversation about social determinants of health strategy is with the data piece. So how does big data impact or change the industry?
We all know, having been in this industry and seeing other industries, that we are what I would call behind from a technology and a data perspective. You know, we spent the last better part of two decades digitizing, you know, medical information and implementing, you know, new technologies to try to drive efficiency in the capture of data. When you look at that, you know, 80% of the medical record is still unstructured. Right? So hard to imagine how you make sense of some of that data that we're capturing. It's the equivalent, you think about it, about an attachment in your email. And you try to search for or make sense of that. But healthcare data at the same time is growing at nearly 50% over the last, you know, 5 to 7 years. And it's expected to outpace, you know, even the financial services market, media and entertainment over the next 5 to 7 years in terms of growth. But the reality is, as I look at it, is it's not about the volume of data, but rather the insight that we can deliver effectively and efficiently to drive improvement. You know, 25% of the U.S. healthcare spending is considered waste, right? If you look at that, somewhere, you know, $760 billion to $900 and some odd billion a year, according to JAMA. And a 30% of that, you know, is administrative cost. So as you think about why does that occur if we have this massive amount of data and can deliver insights? I think it's because we have silos of data with various stakeholders, which creates this lack of transparency on all sides of the healthcare industry. So again, it's not about the size of the data. We're capturing and growing the amounts that we have, but the effectiveness and the efficiency through which we deliver insights with that data is problematic kind of in today's market.
Absolutely. Thank you for setting the groundwork with that background. I think it's really helpful to set the stage for the rest of our discussion. And I think the other big thing that we need to acknowledge in grander spectrum of the health industry today is the pandemic. From your perspective, what priorities have shifted for payers and providers given COVID-19?
Aside from us all working from our homes, there's been quite a bit of impact, as you can appreciate. You know, I think the biggest thing as we look at it is the focus on the individual. So whether that's a patient or a member, it's driven into even a greater area of focus for all the parties and all the stakeholders kind of combined. You know, we've also seen this major shift in care settings, you know, from people using the emergency department as a clinic, you know, to a shift towards heavier use of kind of ambulatory care settings and virtual care or care in the home is becoming very real. And so I think we're certainly seeing some level of, I would argue, positive impacts on, you know, patient member behavior in terms of identifying, you know, probably from a pandemic perspective, a less risky in terms of, being infected with COVID kind of shift in behavior. And hopefully, as a healthcare person who cares about this industry deeply, that we've seen some shift in some of that behavior in a positive manner, where it's less costly and more effective to deliver care in some of those settings. But I think that draws into question for both the payers and the providers is how do we stay connected and informed in a more distributed kind of remote settings of care? And how do we engage those individuals in that scenario? You know, what are the different modes and means and preferences that they have in terms of communication and engagement becomes important and at the forefront? You know, what are the patient's needs beyond the clinical interaction, the clinical care, financially, you know, transportation, you know, different care settings and availability, you know, hours of operation, you know, they have challenges with nutrition and food, you know, access or affordability, you know, what other support services and investments can we make to further engage and build the relationship ongoing with that patient or that member? You know, and the provider specifically is, how do they stay engaged and alter their interactions in kind of this highly competitive, localized kind of market environment with the big systems getting bigger, consolidating further, while managing the financial strain that the pandemic has put on them? And then for payers, on the flip side, I think financially beneficial, given the lack of utilization of care and claim expense that they had, but they've always been challenged with, you know, attracting and retaining members and building member loyalty. So what do they invest in terms of building trust with their members to facilitate, you know, better health and wellness outcomes?
Absolutely. And it seems like a lot of those priorities you just laid out, some of those challenges or things you need to work on, the solution may lie in data for some of those. But like you mentioned earlier, there's a lot of siloed data systems, which is creating that lack of transparency. Do you think that accurate data plays a bigger role now than ever before in all of this? And if so, how?
I don't think there's any doubt. I think with the massive amount of capture of data, the combination of the pandemic changes in behavior that we're seeing, the broader financial impacts that the pandemic has had on businesses, on individuals, on communities kind of broadly, has created additional kind of fracture, as I would put it, in terms of data accuracy and completeness. So again, I don't think volume is the problem. I think we've got, you know, systems in place, albeit arguably not the most efficient and connected, but it's about the accuracy, to your point, of collecting that data, making sure the data is timely and up to date, that it's event driven, right? That we know when certain things happen in certain communities with certain individuals. Everything from, you know, the impacts of COVID on, you know, the communities of color and the disparate impacts we've seen there, the lack of ability to distribute, you know, vaccines in an effective and efficient manner to those various communities. So all of those things driven on the back, in my opinion, on the accuracy of the data, the timeliness of that data, and then the deriving of insights and delivery of those insights to drive value has been challenged. I mean, the efficient, you know, kind of capture of data and then fusing disparate data sources together is a challenge for everybody, right? Clinical data is only a part, but the social and environmental data is critical to knowing how to reach, you know, that patient or that member. And then how do we as an industry deploy limited resources in a more efficient manner for the best health and wellness outcomes? A good friend of mine is a family practice physician who shares a great example. You know, he says, if he knows that you're sick, but does not know that you have diabetes with congestive heart failure, you know, how does he treat you? So I think that goes to the same as, you know, how do we deliver the right level of information, the most accurate and meaningful level of information with an obvious kind of decision point to that person to make, you know, the best decisions about how to deploy resources. You know, it lends itself still to the same for, you know, the personal interactions with those patients or members. If I cannot reach you because I have poor contact information, because you've lost a job and you've had to move during the pandemic and those kind of things, like everything stops right there. I can't contact you. It doesn't matter what I know about your, you know, your clinical status at the time. Or even the next action I'm looking for you to take in terms of treatment. So one is, can I reach you? Then how best to reach you? You know, what are the preferences around that? Do I know your current health status? Do I know if you've been seen recently and by whom for what? Do I know if you're taking your meds? What meds? And if you're not seeking care, why not? You know, what are those aspects that are barriers, if you will, that are impacting you and keeping you from accessing care? So the most up-to-date, you know, financial status of an individual, whether or not they have transportation, whether or not they live with around family members that can, you know, help with, you know, social isolation. Are they educated enough about the system to be able to navigate it? So on top of all that, you know, with the world changing and loss of jobs and the increased levels of stress and obviously very clearly a new disease entering the mix, plus people not, you know, being fearful of accessing preventative care and putting off other medical visits that they should have had, all of those together, and if not accurate and delivered to the right person at the right time in the right mode, very hard to have an impact on the broader healthcare system.
Absolutely. And I think the anecdote you shared about the family physician, it just is such a strong example and sums it up so well. But let me ask you one last question, which is, why do you think social determinants of health data is so impactful and necessary?
Yeah, it's certainly a growing area of interest and one that we're, you know, very keen to deploy resources against, given the vast amounts of data that we have at our disposal, you know, kind of as we think about it, information for good, how do we put it in the right hands again to the right people in the right mode where they can make better, more informed decisions to have the greatest impact on the largest number of lives for, you know, health and wellness improvement overall. And we've seen this, you know, many times over. I think that the study that suggests that only 20% of your health and wellness is driven by clinical care, right, in your interaction with the health system, and the other 80% being genetics and the environment in which you, you know, as we say, live, play, work, and pray. So as a healthcare industry, you know, we've done a lot around clinical data and segmentation and things like that, you know, to understand variations in by disease state or by age or those kind of things. How do people behave differently? And we arguably have the most advanced healthcare industry and innovation in the world. And we arguably have more resources than almost any other country in the world, if not the most. But the efficient use and deployment of those resources, right, and the effectiveness of their outcomes certainly is in question. So as we think about it, right, as the economy or the society itself becomes more remote, you know, looks for more efficient and effective and convenient, quite frankly, ways to access and interact with the healthcare system. And we talked about, you know, virtual care and alternate care settings and care in the home, and we're more connected, you know, via our devices and our monitoring technology and all of those things. How do we, though, use that data in combination with the broader environment and the 80%, if you will, to better understand where we can intervene? And we've all got limited resources. We have a lot of them, but in and of our own, you know, be it a provider or a payer or a community-based organization, even an employer, as we're seeing them take a more active stance in helping to try to improve health and wellness and effectiveness. How do we better understand how to deploy those resources at both the community level, right, where there's risk for financial strain or crime prevalence or lack of transportation, down to the individual level? And what specifically is hampering them from an efficient interaction and an improvement of their overall health and wellness? And so if we don't know those kind of things, right, we don't have this broader picture of an individual, I don't know whether or not I don't have a location near you, right, that you can access primary care. I don't know whether you don't have transportation. I don't know if you need childcare. I don't know if you have, you know, challenges with health literacy and understanding how to interact with the system. All of those things paint this broader picture. And at the end of the day, that data, infusing that data together with the clinical data and the deep knowledge we have about your health, wellness, and the care you've received, paints a broader picture so that payers can begin to design specific interventions at both the community and the individual level. The providers as well can better engage and deploy resources against the needs of those patients that visit them, right? And to begin to build, you know, better consistent interactions in a more meaningful way. I think it's why we're thinking about the broader world of social determinants of health and identifying social risk is such an important additive component to the data that we've already kind of captured.
Absolutely. Well, Jim, it's been so fascinating to hear your perspective on where we're at with big data in healthcare, what improvements need to be made, what's coming next, and how this all plays into social determinants of health strategy. So I just want to thank you so much for your time today. It's been such a pleasure speaking with you.
Thank you, Mackenzie. I appreciate the opportunity to talk with you, and we're big fans of Becker's and all the things you guys do for the industry. So thank you again.
Of course. And I'd also like to thank our podcast sponsor, TransUnion Healthcare. You can tune into more podcasts from Becker's Healthcare by visiting our podcast page at beckershospitalreview.com/podcast.